Sounds good.
Hi, welcome to the first episode of the Canine Connection podcast. My name is Petra Ford, and I'm here with Lori. And we're just going to tell you guys a little bit about ourselves and why we got into dogs and why we are so obsessed with dog training. So we're going to start with Lori.
Hi, my name is Lori Stramavicius. Don't even try to pronounce it. Everyone just calls me Lori. And I'm really excited about this. I am going to just start by telling you how I got into dog training or dogs in general. So my daughter had a little basset hound mix and she did 4-H with this dog. And I would go to all the meetings and I'd have to drive her and sit through these meetings. And then she decided through doing 4-H and training her dog that she wanted to become a therapy dog team. She wanted to take this dog to the library and have little kids sit around and read to her dog. And my daughter was only 8 years old at this time. So we signed her up for pretty much like a CGC class. And it was based on, you know, getting your CGC. And then on the other side, it was you could also keep going and get your dog certified as a therapy dog. And that's what she did. But every time we'd go to class and I would sit there and watch, I would be learning how she did all of these training behaviors that she was being taught by her instructor. And in the meantime, we had gotten a black lab puppy just as a pet. That would be Mary Elizabeth, who was my first dog in competition obedience. But we had gotten her as a pet. But watching my daughter train her dog at all of these classes, I was fascinated by it, like totally fascinated by it. And I would go home and I would literally copy everything that she was doing with her dog and I would do it at home with this puppy. And that's literally how I was fascinated by how quickly this dog learned tricks. I thought it was so fun. And I was starting to just develop this great relationship with this puppy. And basically we went weeks and weeks doing that to the point where I had this puppy like really well trained. And one of the instructors had talked about Rally and wanted my daughter to get into Rally. I had no idea about any of that stuff. So I basically watched it. I looked it up on YouTube. I figured out what Rally was. And I signed up for a Rally course. And that is literally how I got hooked on competition stuff. It started in Rally. And it wasn't until I went up to a dog show in Connecticut and I had entered a Rally trial. And after that trial, I walked over to the obedience rings and I watched a utility class. I watched somebody actually get their UD title and I said, that is what I want to do. And that is how it started. I had I didn't even know about the world of competition dog sports, until, you know, I thank my daughter all the time that she had gotten into 4-H and started doing classes with her dog. That is how I got into it. So
that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of that. So the funny thing is about parallels. So I was never allowed to have any animals growing up. I was like animal obsessed, but my mother was like vehemently against any animals. So one day, fast forward many years, I was living with a couple roommates in a townhouse. And I get up one day and I'm like, oh my God, I don't live home anymore. I can get a dog. So I run up to my roommates and I'm like, guys, let's get a dog. So this is how long ago it was. It's really sad is that there was no internet.
Oh my God.
So we got this big AKC book on the different dog breeds. And we're like, we're clueless. We're like leafing through. We're like, this dog looks cool. And then it would say the dog is independent. And we're like, yeah, we don't want that. So long story short, we decided we wanted to get a lab. And so we decided that day one. Day two, I come home from work. In walks my roommate with a black lab puppy.
Yay!
Like, I thought we were doing this together. So... That was my first dog, and he was just a pet. I don't think he knew how to do anything except wander around with us. But then years later, when he was probably, I don't know, like 7-ish or so, I read about being therapy dogs. So I went to a local dog club that just rented out this hall and took the basic lessons I needed so he could be a therapy dog. And that's as far as I got with him. He was an amazing therapy dog. And my next lab was a yellow lab. I was like, well, I'll make him a therapy dog too. So I brought him to the same place. And they're like, you're doing well with this training. You should train for competition obedience. And I was like, I don't know what that is. But I was like, all right, I started taking the classes, except this was almost where my obedience career ended. they were pop and jerk, which basically means, no food. They were like, they would always talk horribly about food. And I was like, I don't even know what these people are talking about. So you just, put your dog on a choke chain and you pop them and whatever. So Duncan did not like it. So I went in there one day and I said, we're supposed to do this figure eight thing. And I keep popping him. And the more I pop him, the slower, the more he hangs back. I'm like, I don't know about this. And this big guy, he's like, give him to me. Bad move. So he takes him around the outside. Duncan starts to hold back because Duncan is anticipating getting popped. I did not know that at the time. And he starts popping him hard and Duncan lays down on the ground and he drags him like a mop. That was the last time I was ever there. So I went home and I told my ex-husband at the time, like, nope, disobedience stuff is not for me. Duncan hates it. I hate it. We're out. But I wanted to do something with him. So I found an actual dog school and I went there and I was going to try. So I started agility classes with him, which, oh my God, bless his heart, this poor dog. He was not made to be a performance dog. So I'm like trying to do agility and he's shaking on the teeter because it's moving under his feet. And I'm like, and someone says to me, I don't know if this is the best sport for him. What about obedience? I said, oh, no. I had a horrible experience. And they're like, well, try this school. We do it different. And they did. It still wasn't all positive, but it was a lot more motivational. And so that's actually how I got into obedience with him. The poor thing, like it was still hard for him. He was already, an adult dog.
Right.
And he tried his best. He was my first field training dog. And he really struggled with that. Bless his heart, this poor animal. Like he put up with all this crazy stuff that I tried to do with him. And he did his best, but combine that with my horrendous training skills, right? Cause I had I didn't know anything. I was kind of a mess, but, I apologize to him all the time, but he tried really hard. So anyway, he was my first competition dog and, he was actually a yellow lab. So he was my only yellow lab.
Oh, that's so funny.
So that was Duncan.
Oh my God. That is so funny.
Yeah. So that's how I started. And then I think pretty much based on what you said, I what I did see with these dogs that, well, you know, TJ had minimal training, but enough to be a really good therapy dog. And it really, we had a pretty strong relationship. But then when with Duncan, when I started to like train him a lot, I was like, oh, this relationship is like a whole nother level.
Right.
And that's the part that I loved, right? And
right.
what I think really pulled me in hook, line, and sinker and has me hooked to this day is that unbelievably tight relationship. And like where, like TJ, I don't know. I didn't know what he wanted half the time. My dogs, I know exactly what they want all the time.
Same. Yeah.
Because, right? Because they're telling us and we've learned to understand them. So,
Right. Right. Yeah. And we, yeah. and that's the thing, like the training part of it, like just the constant training, like to me, in order to progress, you have to learn to read your dog. Like you have to learn to know what they want. Like you said, like I know what they want all the time. We're with them so much training them. We have to read them so that we're able to communicate with them, right? You know, we can't say words to them. That's like the whole
topic
we're gonna talk
so
about.
That leads us right into our first topic, which is
correct.
Speaking dog and why right. is it so hard for us to communicate with them?
Right, right. Which to me, you know, this is the biggest, I think it's, I don't want to say it's a hurdle for people, but I think that either it's a misconception of what needs to be, what you need to learn to do with your dog, read your dog to progress in dog training. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. What I feel when I, with all the students I've worked with, is the majority of humans are trying to train dogs in human language, mm-hmm. right? So they're putting human perceptions, human ideas, everything human on the dog. And they're almost, they're reading the dogs in human terms. And I think that's where they go horribly, where things go horribly awry and where they struggle really hard, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I still haven't come up with the best example, but it's like if someone took you and put you in a different country in a village, like in the middle of Africa, where they don't, no one speaks your language, their lives are completely and utterly different. But even that is still human to human, right? Right. Animals don't use words and people love to talk. So they're like talking, 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 talking. And dogs like, I have no idea what you're saying. Dogs look at pictures, right? Context, like what's going on in the area I'm in. Physical cues, what is the human doing?
Right.
And humans tend to have, unless they have an athletic background, they tend to have zero body awareness, right?
Right.
So they're doing things that they're not, they don't even know they're doing, and never mind no understanding that what they're doing is influencing the dog's understanding
right.
in a positive or negative way. I feel like if people were able to kind of separate themselves and understand that, okay, in order to communicate with my dog, I have to speak the dog's language, right? We're just like, you should understand what I'm saying because I'm being perfectly clear. Even when the dog's going, huh?
Right.
I don't know what you want.
Right.
And then they say, the dog's being stubborn, or the dog's being lazy, or the dog's not listening, or the dog's check, you know, they put all these labels on it, human labels.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you're just not speaking their language.
Right, right.
So they and they're sitting there and they're desperately trying to weed through all this stuff we're throwing at them and put some sort of context and say, well, maybe they mean this thing.
Right.
And then on top of all that, yeah, they're guessing. And then we're like, what's wrong with this dog? And then we're completely inconsistent on top of everything else, right? So even if you say sit, like if I have a pet client come in and they're like, oh, my dog knows how to sit. And they go to show me and they're like, sit, 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 sit. They're saying it 10 different ways. They're giving all a wide variety of like body and hand signals. And then they're like, the whole time they're like, I don't know why he's not doing it. I know he knows it. And then finally the dog is like, do you want me to sit? And they're like, see, he knows it.
Yep. Yep. So the other day I had my class, I was doing my, teaching my class and, you know, I have them all warm up. So I'm on the outside of the ring and I'm chatting with somebody and they're out there warming up, getting engagement and whatnot. And all of a sudden I just stopped and I'm like listening to all this chatter going on. Like talking, like it sounded like I was in a coffee shop. And I look out and I'm watching these guys and they're all out there and talk to their dogs, like talking to their dogs, like they're like hanging out with a buddy. And I went, everybody stop. And the dogs are like they look frantic almost. They're like, oh my God. You know, there's like seven people out on the floor. People are talking. The dog's eyeballs are popping out of their head. So I said, everybody stop. I said, from here on out, the next 2 minutes of your warm-up is on silence. And they're all like, oh, what? I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, silence, because your dogs have no idea what you're saying to them right now. Mm-hmm. And you're just confusing and stressing them out. And they did. They did silence. And they worked hard to make sure they could communicate with their dogs. And their dogs were giving such beautiful engagement. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it.
I do that to a lot of my students. I've been doing that for, I don't know, I think I started it last year at some point, because I'm like, you're not allowed to talk to your dog at all. You're allowed to give a cue. If you need to give a verbal cue, you can give that cue. Mm-hmm. And if you use a verbal marker, so like if instead of a clicker, if you say yes, you're allowed to say yes or good. Once your dog, so my definition of yes is you're correct, you're done, right? So now I'm going to give you a reward, but like you're finished with the task you were doing. So at that point, if you want to praise your dog and tell them how great they are, that's fine. But other than that, you're not allowed to talk. And in every single instance, you see in one session in an astounding difference.
Yep.
In the dog.
Yeah.
And the dog's behavior. And the funny thing is, a lot of times people are talking to get engagement. Well, the quieter you are, the more engaged the dog is. So if I whisper, Right. Then what does everybody do? Leans in, tunes harder. Everything out, and is like, what is she saying? And I have your full attention. Same thing with the dog.
Yeah.
And I think the words interfere with their ability to process, right? So imagine you're reading something to learn it, something that requires your concentration, and then your family member comes up and starts talking. What do you do? Shut up.
Right, right.
I need to concentrate. Like, be quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, I find too, you know, and the things that are being said, this is a thing. Like what kills me is I feel like whatever's going on inside of their head, like, and I think it's like driven by their emotional response to what's going on at the moment with their dog. So like if their dog isn't sitting straight or their dog, you know, doesn't get into heel position quick enough, they literally, like, whatever's in their head, they're like, why aren't you getting into heel position? You know this. Mm-hmm. Like, these words are pouring out of the dog. And I'm like, hello, does your dog, like, know that much? Like, that's astounding. Your dog knows that whole vocabulary you just said. And they just laugh. I'm like, they don't understand it. They're like, wah, 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 wah. That is what your dog is literally hearing coming out of your mouth. Use the words your dog knows. Simplify it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And for some people, too, the words add pressure, right? Because you made an awesome point that their emotions, we can't control our emotions typically. So the emotions are going to be behind those words, right? So if I'm not happy with what you're doing, or I'm frustrated with what you're doing, or if I feel like the dog's struggling, people think they're helping the dog and they get all pitchy, like, come on, Fluffy, you can do it. And the dog, that's annoying. Like, that's pressure. Right. And so it puts dogs off because they don't understand the words, but they definitely feel the emotion behind the words. Right.
Yeah.
And if emotion is not positive or helpful, then all it's going to do is make the dog go, it's going to turn the dog off. The dog's going to be really unsure, insecure, worried, confused.
Right. And then what gets paired with that, which is definitely part of this, is then body language comes into play big time. Something's not going right. So what do you want to do? You want to bend over your dog. Like, everybody wants to do that. Things aren't going great. For some reason, we want to bend down and get closer to the dog. And of course, we all know what that's going to do is create huge pressure and make the dog want to just melt. But that's what I see. The dog's not sitting promptly. The person's bending over. Dog still is not sitting promptly. Bending over more. Like, they want to use their body pressure, which is like the exact opposite of what you need to be doing. So that comes into play, is our, you know, making sure we're aware of what we're doing with our bodies.
Yeah, our bodies, it's huge. Like, the one advantage, when I started doing online teaching, when they first asked me to do it, in my head, I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. Like, how am I really going to be able to help these people long distance? Like, I need to be there. I need to be able to, like, you know, have the person in front of me. Well, it turns out it's phenomenal because they have to record themselves. Then they have to review the video because they have to edit it to submit it. And very quickly, within a couple weeks, somebody even emailed me yesterday. It was so funny. She goes, so I was going to submit a video. And then as I was watching it, I heard your voice and I noticed all the things I did wrong. So I figured I'm not going to submit that one. I'm going to submit this other one.
Because I already know but you're going to tell me.
Yeah, but that's amazing because that means you figured it out yourself.
Right.
But it's because they're looking back at it. Because in the moment, they had no idea they were doing any of that.
Right.
Or never mind the information it's giving the dog or how it's impacting them emotionally. Right. Right. Some people quote unquote praise their dogs. Right. They bend over their dog and the dog like looks away, moves away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so do you think your dog is perceiving that as a reward or not? And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, take a look. This girl that worked for me, she was amazing with dogs. She did this video that I'm going to find. And hopefully it still exists because it was phenomenal. Where she did a video showing you know, general public, when you do this, see how your dog doesn't like it because they're doing that. So she used Zana. Zana is an, everybody should have to train Zana because she is not going to tolerate that.
Right, right.
So you lean over her and she's like, ugh. I mean, she was so clear. I don't like that. And no, I don't like either. And at the end of the video, she wouldn't even look at Riley. She was so annoyed with her. She's like, I'm not even looking at you. We're not friends anymore. And then she took Zeal, who's very affectionate, extremely tolerant. And she did a lot of the same things. And you see completely opposite body language, right? He's right. Like, oh, I do like this. I do like that. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty clear about it, but people don't read it. Like, they're like, they have this overwhelming urge to hug their dog, mm-hmm. and they can't control it. And the dog's right. like, oh God, please get off me.
Right. I know. And then it's a habit. They don't even, like you said, that's a big thing, that lack of awareness of it. And of course, the, you know, going back to what I just said with the habit forming, you know, every time you go to praise your dog, they want to bend over the dog, and you tell them 80 times, like, don't bend over your dog. And you have to break those habits. But going back to you saying, you know, your online students and that they have to do their videos and they have to watch them. You know, I'm always pushing my students like video everything. It's so, and it's really like, I get lazy about it. You know, I don't always want to set up my freaking tripod and my stupid phone on it and all that, but that's where you're going to see all the stuff that you're not mm-hmm. even aware you're doing. Like, it's amazing. And how it affects your dog. Like, your dogs are going to tell you right off the bat.
Well, I mean, I think a big part of the issue, and this is probably could be like a whole episode, is reading dogs, right? Because people misread their dogs all the time. But again, I think it's because they're reading them from a human perspective versus mm-hmm. like, I think it's really important for people. I have spent an inordinate amount of time watching my dogs together, right? So I have 3 to 4 dogs typically. Their interactions are so interesting, and that's how they communicate. Yeah. And yet we're trying to communicate with them again. Like, we're like, oh, he's yawning, he's tired. No, he's not tired. Do they sometimes yawn when they're tired? Yes. But they also yawn for a host of other reasons. And you need to learn to dissect and interpret what does it mean
right.
from the dog's perspective, not from our perspective.
Right. From a human perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so true. I mean, like, she's my second obedience dog, the one I'm currently trialing and competing with right now. And she hates pressure. And in everyday life, she hates pressure. So when I watch the dogs, when they're all together out, like if we're hiking and stuff, like Stormy, who's my youngest, and she's huge and she's like a Mack truck. Like, she just like doesn't care if it's in her way. She's plowing through it. Like, she like ever literally hears her coming and like winces and crouches down because of the pressure of that mm-hmm. dog. So I watch this all the time, you know, where, and in life with me as a training partner, I know she doesn't like pressure either, just from training her. But they do. You can see it in their lives. If you watch them carefully enough in their everyday pet lives, you're going to notice those things, definitely.
And if you see how they communicate with each other, right? They're not having a conversation.
Right.
Like with words, they're communicating with motion, with pressure, with very, very subtle physical cues. That's why, back to the body awareness, my dogs are so keyed in that if I do the slightest thing different with even just my eyes, that's information to my dogs, right? And it's not because my dogs are so special. Like our dog, all dogs are looking at everything, like your eyes, like every facial expression, your hands, your arms, your shoulders, like everything, because that's how they communicate with one another, you know. And some of the things we do to them, like the hugging thing, although to be honest, I had this employee once, I was like, oh my gosh, she is going to get bitten, because she thought all dogs were stuffed animals and she loved them. So she would just go up to a dog and be like, put her face in his face, like, oh, and I'm like, oh, this is going to end very badly, right? So I would say it to her all the time. So I'm like, okay, this is not working. So one day she's sitting there and I walk right, I put my face, it was horribly uncomfortable for me, but I took one for the team. I put my face right up against her face and I hugged her and I hovered over her. And I was like, so how you feeling right now? You comfortable? And she's like, get off me. And I'm like, okay, that's how the dogs feel. She's like, oh, okay, got it. Behavior changed. So a lot of what we do to them, if a human did that to us, we would be completely creeped out, especially, totally. You know, like, okay, that's enough. Stop hanging on me.
Right. It's like, it's huge. That is so huge. So this is amazing to me. This is why I love training dogs. Like, seriously, it is just fascinates me. And just that intuition of them reading our body language is crazy. So I'm at the Syracuse qualifier last year, and I'm doing utility, and Ever's coming over the jump for directed jumping. And I'm like, I literally go, I'm going to stand up tall and squeeze my ass cheeks in, and I'm going to look at her so she hits that front and like bounces into it. So she comes over the jump and she's heading toward me and I'm doing it. And all of a sudden I'm like, shit. I can see her face and she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And she just stopped. She stopped like 2.5 feet out at me and looked at me like, I don't know what you're doing, but that is not what you always do. And I right there, like I kicked myself and I'm like, that is like, that's amazing to me. Amazing to me, like that dog read that body language coming in fast off of jumping. Reading me like that. It's just,
well,
yeah,
that's how they read things, right? And one time I was having so Zeal, he kept moving in on signals, and he was always a very, 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 very nervous dog. So, and I thought I'd fix it, get to a trial, I'd leave him, he'd move a couple steps, not all the way, just a couple steps. He always looked a little confused, and I was like, but I just, you know, I made an assumption, right? I was like, right. Oh gosh, he must still be nervous. So I get to a trial, he does it again, and I come out of the ring, and I talk to myself all the time, out loud, everywhere, including the supermarket, apparently. So I'm walking to my crate, and I'm like, what? So I don't understand why something is confusing you. And a lovely competitor, lovely, lovely woman who sadly is no longer with us. She was amazing. And she was, and this was so kind because we were competing against each other. And she says, do you want to know what I think? And I'm like, absolutely, please tell me what you think. And she says, well, when you're leaving him, you're not breaking eye contact. So, and you usually break eye contact. And she said, so I think he's confused. And she was right. So I was telling him to wait with my one hand, but I did not break eye contact, which meant I was giving him heel picture.
Right.
So he was confused. He's like, well, am I supposed to heel or am I supposed to wait? So next day in the ring, I broke eye contact, wait, walked away. Perfect. Never moved again.
Yeah.
And it was just that one tiny little thing of right. just breaking the eye contact. That right. was it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And he was correct. I was being confusing.
Right. Because you weren't being clear.
I was not being clear, you know, and that's why I am obsessed with, I feel like the longer I train, the less I know. Like I'm constantly obsessed with like, I can communicate. I should be able to do a better job with this. And the longer I train, the more frustrated I get. I just got very frustrated with someone the other day when people say things like the dog's being lazy or the dog's blowing me off or the dog's doesn't feel like it or putting all these things on the dog. And really, at the end of the day, it's always the same root cause. The dog's confused.
Yeah.
Right. So either it's a handling error or it's a training error. Right. So like 100% of the time, even when there were times where my dog did something in the ring and they flunked and I'm walking outside and I'm so frustrated and I'm like, I never tell the dog that, but I'm outside and I'm like, it was his fault this time. I know it was his fault. And by the time I'm done with my walk, I'm like, ugh, it was not his fault. I remember now. I did that stupid thing in training and that's why he did it.
Yeah.
I'm like, ugh.
I know. And then every time that happens to me, which is a lot, like all the time, it always ends in, oh shit. You know, that realization every time, you know, and I remember, like today, go ahead. No, I was going to say like today I'm training Stormy and we're down at a park and I had a friend with me and she's helping me and we worked on her stand and her moving stand. Like I'm proofing her stand and I'm like waving arms and I'm moving my left arm. I'm moving my right arm. And then she did great. And then we moved on and I said, let's go do some signal work. And she's only two. So I'm literally just working pieces with her. We go to move to work on signals. I put her on her mat. She does her down. I move my arm to do the sit. And she's like locked, like frozen, right. looking at me. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? Like, I'm like, what's going on? Like, you're so consistent with this. I'm like, sit. She sits. I put her back in a down. I try the signal again. She looks at me like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then my friend, she goes, well, you know, you were just over there proofing her on the stand, make
right.
it. And I'm like, duh, like again, like, duh. Poor dogs.
I did agility with one dog because that was his jam. And like, he couldn't do obedience. Long story. I'm not going to get into all the details. It doesn't matter why. I hated agility. I found it to be the most frustrating thing on the planet because if you make the slightest tiny glitch, your dog knocks a bar. And he was so honest, right? And it was so frustrating to me because it was always my fault. Like I twitched and I was like, you know, my feet were facing one way, my upper body was facing the other way.
Right.
So I'm at a trial and we flunk again. And I'm like, I come out of the ring and I was so happy. And I was dating this guy at the time. He's like, why are you so happy you just flunked? And I said, because this is the very first time ever that I've shown this dog that it was his mistake and not my mistake. And I'm like, and it is such a relief to not be the responsible one. So I'm sitting there, and not 5 minutes later, my instructor walks over and she looks at me and she goes, well, you fucked that up again. And I'm like, what? She's like, look at the tape. You did blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, I'll be darned. I did it again. And I was like, so that was the end of my happiness. Because I was like,
your balloon got popped pretty quick.
Yeah. So I was like, all right. So basically, bottom line is, doesn't matter the sport. It doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
It's always our fault. And I find that people struggle with that. And I think that's a mental management, like, ego thing, right? And I don't mean ego, like conceited ego. I mean, like, sense of self. Like, nobody wants to be embarrassed. Nobody wants to be wrong. Nobody wants to fail. And it's a lot easier to just blame the dog, right?
Right.
But I find that if we change our mindset and completely take responsibility, then I think that's actually empowering. Because if my dog gets up and quote unquote doesn't feel like doing it today, or decides in the ring he's going to quote unquote blow me off, I cannot control that. That's completely out of my hands.
Right.
But if it's a handling issue, for sure I can fix that.
Yeah.
If it's a training issue, yes, it might be challenging. It might be hard. It might take me a while. But I can figure it out, and then I can fix it.
Right.
So in both cases, it gives us, you know, the power to have a better outcome down the road. Versus kind of being victims because, you know, based on whatever our dog feels like that day, which, right. You know.
Right. Well, that to me is also, you know, it's that emotional side of it. Like, us humans let our emotions get a hold of us. We let it take control and we put it on the dog. That's how I feel. But, you know, the whole being able to fix stuff, the handling errors, the training errors, you know, that's why I love training dogs. Like, I love just training my dogs. Like, trialing is great, but I mean, literally, I train my ass off. I go to a trial, and even if I flunk, and something like worked that I had been working on in training, mm-hmm. I come out of the ring and I'm just like, that was freaking great. I'm so happy. I'm so excited, you know? And people are looking at me and they're like, you just freaking enqued. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. Like, we just made huge headway. And that to me is why I work my fucking ass off. I just love it. I love that aspect of just trying to always be better as a handler for my dogs.
And I love it because it is so complicated. And just when you think you've got it all figured out, you get another dog. And then it, like, I remember I had, you know, had a decent amount of success with Tyler. And then I think Zayden was my next dog. So, and we had gone to all these, I had gone to seminars and I was obsessed. So I get this puppy and I was a little bit cocky. I was like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I know how to train puppies and I'm doing all this stuff with him. And then it's like a couple months and I'm in my yard and all of a sudden I stand there and I go, I don't think this dog has learned anything. Like, he didn't. Like, he could follow a lure, but he wasn't learning. So I sat down on my stairs in my yard, and I'm like, this is going horribly wrong. Like everything that I think I'm so clever and I'm doing is not working for him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so there we go. I had to start from square one and reinvent the wheel because none of the techniques that worked for the prior dog were working for him. If, as a matter of fact, they were having the opposite effect. And that is another reason why I love training, because it is so complicated. And there are so many layers to it. And then different dogs perceive things completely differently. They process differently. They take in information differently. They respond to the environment differently. And so you have all these techniques. And guess what? For this dog, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is humbling. It is humbling. Yeah, I know. And that I love that too. I just, you know, you get a new dog. Like I got Stormy. Like Ever's that dog who just, she was so easy to train with the toolbox I had currently with her. And then came along Stormy. And I literally remember when she was like 9 weeks old and I'm like, this puppy can barely even follow a food lure. Like that was when I was like, this puppy's going to be totally different from ever, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that is the realization of where when people are like, well, I don't know how we're going to fix this solution with my dog. I want you to help me do it. And especially if it's somebody who's first coming to me and I don't know the dog, like that's really hard because I don't know how your dog learns. I don't know how your dog perceives pressure. I don't know. Like these factors really are going to shape how we are able to deliver the information to your dog that your dog understands and becomes the learner that we want him to become. Right. It's like, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I think a big problem a lot of people have is the dog before syndrome. Right. Mm-hmm. I encounter this the time.
Oh my God.
And the label syndrome. Right. So what I had Tyler like relatively early on, if you want to call it, in my training career, for lack of a better word, he was spectacular. Like he was just a unicorn. Like the more I train, the more I realize how absolutely, just unique he was, right? I had to train him and handle him, but he was just a unique animal.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that after him, if I was not extremely careful, I was going to have a very hard time. I was going to be very unhappy with my next dog. Plus, like that dog and I had a bond, like nobody's business. Like that dog would have died for me. He would have run through a brick. He worked for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, and people, when he was young, people would come up to me like little old ladies. Well, I'm one now, will come up to me and say, I hope you know this is a very special dog. And I'm just super grateful that I listened and I knew enough to recognize that he was very special and to enjoy him. After him, I was like, okay, you had better pay attention when you train because the next dogs, et cetera, are not going to be like that.
Right.
And if you're not careful, you're going to go down a rabbit hole. Right. And you're not going to train the dog in front of you. You're going to train a dog that's a pale comparison to the prior dog.
Yeah.
Or people have like a dog that was nervous and then they treat the next dog as if it's nervous. And I'm like, I don't know, man. That dog doesn't look nervous to me at all. Or if their dog was really high drive, it was a little too much for them, they take the next dog and they're like, okay, calm down. And I'm like, I think this dog is fine. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I think it's both emotionally being able to separate the dogs, right? Cognitively and emotionally not comparing them.
Right. Right.
And then being able to objectively stand back and like just deal with what's in front of you, mm-hmm, without pulling all that other stuff into the mix. Now, sure, if it's relevant, yes, but a lot of times it's not, and it's not helping your training or your relationship with this dog that you have in front of you right now.
Right, right. Which, you know, as we know in the world we are in with the dogs and competition stuff, that's when, you know, you hear of dogs being washed or, you know, mm-hmm, because, you know, it's kind of put on the dog that the dog isn't going to live up to the expectations of what the person thought or wanted it to be at whatever stage the dog is at in training, puppy or adolescent. And, you know, instead of trying to figure out how to train and communicate with the dog so it progresses and learns, you know, sometimes I think people just fall into that, you know, trap of, like you said, you know, emotionally putting it on the dog. And then the dog gets washed and they get a new dog. So that happens in the industry for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it is a huge thing in field training, right? Yeah, which was one of my first sports. They wash dogs. So by wash, and for people that don't know, is they just say this dog's not going to make it and they sell it.
Right.
So, but the problem there is, which is, I think, happens not just in field training, is they're with a trainer who has a system and they, mm-hmm, train, and I've watched it over and over, they train every dog the same way. And if the dog can't, you know, follow that program, if the dog doesn't learn that way, then right, they wash the, then it's the dog. The dog doesn't, you know. Right. So Tyler, the first when I did field with him, I got to see some of his litter mates, and Tyler was high powered, high drive, but soft in the sense that I almost never had to tell him he was wrong. Like, I never had to say no or don't do that. I go, what'd you do? And he's like, oh God, I'm sorry.
Right.
So he was really soft. So I trained him myself, which is not very common at all. I mean, I had help, but he wasn't with a professional trainer. And so I was able to, like, there was something that we did where you were supposed to use the e-collar for that. And when I did it, Tyler just stopped and was like, what do you want? So I went to the person that mentored me and I said, I think he's confused because he's trying as hard as he can. And then I'm like, do more with the collar. And he doesn't understand. And luckily I was with this guy who was like, yeah, you're right, don't use it. So I hardly ever even needed it. So he did extremely well because I trained him, right? And I adapted my training to him. He had a litter mate that went to a pro and would be at a lot of the same competitions I was at. And the owner would handle him. And the owner was like, here, get over here. Really strong, really yelling. And that dog would implode because it couldn't take the pressure. And he ended up selling him and washing him out. He can't do it. And I thought to myself, if you took my dog and did the same thing to my dog would implode too. Like, he wouldn't be able to take it. But my dog is doing well because there isn't one way and I'm doing it this way. And this way works. I actually tried to get that other dog. He wouldn't sell it to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so every dog is going to have unique challenges, unique personalities, unique strengths and weaknesses. And it's our job and our challenge to, you know, adapt to the dog and figure it out and adjust our training to meet that dog's needs.
Right. Right. That's the goal. That's the ultimate goal. Yeah, you know, and, you know, getting into, I think, you know, the dogs do try to tell us. They tell us in ways mm-hmm. where we're not clearly communicating with them. They get frustrated, right? We all know mm-hmm. that. I think we each have a dog that really tells us when they're frustrated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because they're trying to communicate with us where they're like, I don't know what you fucking want, you know, or why mm-hmm. are you not looking at me? Like, those are the things like that. When we're not being clear or we use wrong body language, some dogs either just freeze up or lock up. Don't do anything mm-hmm. or look at us, you know, their ears mm-hmm. go back and they're starting to worry. They worry. And then the other dogs, they're like going to vocalize at us. They get frustrated mm-hmm. with us and they bark, depending on.
Or they leave, like they go to leave, yeah. you know, and then people are like, hey, you're being naughty. Get back here. And the dog's just like, dude, I'm out. Like, I don't know what's happening. So yeah. I'm just going to.
Take a minute.
Head over here for a minute. Yeah.
I could take a minute by myself. Yeah. I see that a lot. Like I see that a lot. Like in, you know, when the stress becomes too much and the pressure becomes too much with the dog.
Yeah. They do something to be like,
and I think
I can't.
Yeah. And that's read incorrectly quite a bit by,
quite a bit. Yeah,
yeah,
all the
time. You know, where they perceive it to be one thing and it's really definitely not. The dog is really just telling us it's, you know, whether it's stress
it's done.
Pressure.
It's like, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So we're almost at an hour and I don't think we should go over an hour. I want people to know that we're going to do something a little bit different. One is we want people to always have actionable things. So it's great that we're talking, but like, what do I do with that? Right. So we're going to try and give you ideas, things you can do to be more successful in your training. And then we're also going to have a YouTube channel and we're going to take some little videos of different techniques that we talk about and show you how to actually do them so you can see it. So fingers crossed, hopefully I can find this video that Riley took of Zaina clearly saying how she doesn't like certain things. I think that some of the take-home things that I scribbled down were training in silence. I strongly recommend everybody try that. We both mentioned videotaping yourself. It's super powerful. And then watching it. Don't just tape yourself. You got to watch it. being more aware of your body, what you're doing with your body. And I think that will, watching video will help with that. Anything I'm not thinking about, Lori? We talked about so much.
Yeah, I think, you know, which we will definitely do at least one episode on, maybe a part one, part two, is reading dogs. Like that's a big one. Like start really mm-hmm. paying attention to your dog's body language. Cause they will either vocally tell you or their body language is going to tell you how they're feeling about what you're doing or what you're not doing or what you're saying, which is probably too much of, you know, what you're doing. So that's a big one for sure.
Yeah, I think we talked about so many things that can all be pulled into individual episodes. So more episodes will be coming, which we're super excited about. And we're also, you know, gonna have a Facebook page so people can give comments. They can say what you'd like to hear more of, and we can add it to our already super lengthy list of potential topics, questions, things that were confusing, and so on. I think that's it.
What do you think, Lori? Yeah, I agree. I think that was great.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And hopefully we'll see you at our next episode. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.